Hi everyone, and welcome to 4Panel, the Geek Show's dedicated comic book and manga podcast. My name's Rob, and joining me today are Andrew.
Hello.
And Mick.
Hello.
So, how are you two on this very, very, very cold day?
I can't complain. Had a nice brisk walk.
Of course you can't complain. You're Mick Snowden. It's like a national holiday.
I think you'll find I'm actually Mr. T. We established that a couple of weeks back. Do try and keep up with the continuity.
I never pay attention to what happens on these shows.
It's quite literally Siberian out there.
Well, it's not quite literally Siberia, because...
No, I said Siberian. I didn't say Siberia.
Yeah, it's not. We've got a watered-down version of Siberian.
It could be Siberia during the summertime. I hear it's lovely there at that time of the year.
I'll tell you when I finish me work out there.
Oh, this is true. Anyway, let's get into it. Andrew, you've got news for us, haven't you?
I do have the news, God help us all.
Do give us the tidings from the world.
Okay, we'll start off with a bit of movie casting news. And it's news about actresses being cast as characters who are called Minerva. That was a good link. First of all, actress Gemma Chan has been cast in the Captain Marvel movie as Dr. Minerva, who's like an evil pre-scientist, and I think like took Captain Marvel's name at one point, or was Ms. Marvel at some point.
Oh,
but a bad one.
Yeah, I think she was Ms. Marvel at one point rather than Captain Marvel. I think it was before Thingamabob became Captain Marvel.
Thingamabob.
Carol Danvers, that's it.
Thank you.
Anyway, she is a bad guy, and she's played by Gemma Chan, who is in Humans, and Humans was a very good TV show.
Unlike Inhumans. Hey, that's why it sucked. It was the opposite of Humans.
Exactly. They watched Humans and thought, oh no, we have to...
Let's not make that.
But Humans was an amazing show.
Exactly. And that's why all the Inhumans producers were tearing their hairs out going, but we're the Inhumans. Oh no, what a horrible mistake we've made. Every good thing this show has done, we must do the opposite. Our characters can't be this well-developed and nuanced.
Also, it seems to be a show that the Marvel Universe is cherry-picking from, because Black Panther's sister was in that as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, she was, wasn't she? She was like the girl who was a real girl but liked to pretend she was a robot.
Oh, her!
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
Huh. Neat. Also, I've seen Black Panther now, and it's some good times.
Oh, just you wait till we do the Black Panther special. Oh, wait.
We've done it.
But it's fine, we can do the real Black Panther special this week. Anyway, the second part of this story is that Wonder Woman 2 has cast an actress as Barbara Ann Minerva, a.k.a. the Cheetah, or just Cheetah without the. I don't know why I said the, but I'm literally looking at the thing that says a.k.a. Cheetah. And there's not a there, but I said it anyway.
I'm less excited by that casting news.
Yeah, which I should say, that casting news is, it's going to be Kristen Wiig.
Really? Like,
and that's where my interest fell.
The comedy actress from films such as Bridesmaids and Ghostbusters.
Can I just pick you up on two aspects of your description there?
So it's like comedy in inverted commas.
Thank you.
And probably actress also in inverted commas.
I'm not a fan.
It's just such a weird casting choice.
Yeah,
it is.
Maybe the producers of Wonder Woman 2 are thinking, hold on, we were so good with the first one, let's pull back just so that the other DC movies don't look quite as bad in comparison.
Or maybe they're just big fans of the Ghostbusters movie. She was so good in that, apparently, allegedly.
No one was good in it. And I want to just go on record as saying I didn't dislike the Ghostbusters movie because it was female Ghostbusters. I disliked the Ghostbusters movie because it was crap.
And quite frankly, the fact that you would discriminate against crap films like that, I find highly offensive.
Yes. Yeah, but you're offended by me breathing. You know, I can never win.
I'm deeply offended.
Well, I ain't going to stop.
So rude.
So, yeah, she's not really the first choice I think any of us would make for Cheetah. And which version of Cheetah are they aiming for, do they know?
I would assume it's going to be like the version who actually turns into a cheetah.
No, I mean, because there was there's that version in the latest Wonder Woman comics from like last year. Remember, I was talking about Wonder Woman ages ago on 4-Panel. I said she goes to Africa and she meets Cheetah, and Cheetah's been twisted in some way by some African god, and everything just goes a bit haywire after that.
In fairness, what they tend to do in the DC movies is sort of take various aspects of various iterations of characters, don't they, and sort of create something that's slightly not the same as any of them.
So what you're saying is this version is going to be like a were-cheetah, but also wear a cheetah onesie.
Very possibly.
I'd be absolutely down for that.
So
just as long as it isn't the version who goes into casinos and plays poker, but has an ace hidden up his sleeve.
Oh, dear.
That was horrible.
Rob, can you stop writing Andrew's material, please?
I did not go anywhere near that, okay? Like, I had my joke was limited to, so she's basically Chitara from Thundercats. That was it, right?
Like, you know when a dog walks into the living room and, like, very purposely stands right in front of you
and
does a mess on the floor and then sits beside that mess, wagging its tail with a look of absolute contentment on its face?
Yes.
I feel a bit like that. Like, I know full well that what I've done is very, very wrong, but I don't care.
But at the same time, you're immensely proud of it.
Yes.
So you're going to do it in the next stage, which is dragging your backside all over the carpet.
Oh, not again.
Which, I mean, if there was ever an apt metaphor for what this show is. Okay, one last bit of movie news, and it's also a movie that's going to have another character added to it, and that's New Mutants, which is being reshot to add another character.
Why?
I don't know. That just seems weird.
Yes.
Are they is this one where they're going to reshoot the movie to add a new character because they've found an actor in Hollywood that has absolutely got no skeletons in the closet about previous behaviour? So they're desperately trying to shoehorn that person into movie history.
Kind of like Cyborg in the Justice League movie.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be great if they're just like, I don't know, Cypher from the New Mutants. And in every scene, like, all the characters will be talking, and then suddenly it'll cut to Cypher in what's quite clearly a different but similar location saying, yes, and also I am here.
Hang on, are you saying that they're purposefully, it's like their version of a photobomb, just this random character appearing at random throughout the series, or movie, whatever it is?
No, just like, he's clearly intended to be part of the team, but just no one ever acknowledges him or talks to him or makes eye contact with him or appears in a scene with him. Or like maybe half, like near the end, he just vanishes and no one cares because he's Cypher.
So it's only a little bit like Cyborg from Justice League and those scenes where clearly there was no Cyborg in there first, but suddenly Cyborg is there.
I mean, basically a bit like that.
And isn't the New Mutants supposed to be like a horror type thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, apparently, a lot of these reshoots might be to do with Fox showing it to a test audience and the general consensus being that it wasn't scary enough.
So what they're actually photoshopping in now, then, is the bad guy?
No, it's still Cypher, but he's wearing a vampire mask.
And says boo more.
Yes.
He's wandering around going, I want to drink your blood.
One new mutant.
So what's
two new mutants.
Someone had to go there.
Also, Mick, I'm sure you won't know, but do you know what Cypher's incredible mutant superpower is?
No.
He's good at languages.
Three new languages.
So hang on, can he do the accent as well?
Yes, he can do all the accents.
Cypher's a stupid name then, they should just call him Accent. They can have a uniform with a big A on the front.
But we already had that superhero, he's called Animal Man. Who I found out today, his original codename was just A-Man.
It's true.
Don't worry, I'm here to save you. Oh, thank goodness, it's a man.
I need a man to save me.
Comics are silly.
No. They are fundamentally very, very silly.
Speaking of those silly comics, Marvel have got some more coming out as part of their super special once-in-a-lifetime, never-gonna-happen-again reboot.
Oh, yeah.
So I think you'll be shocked to know that Captain America's starting back up with a new number one. And this
get
time,
out of here.
I know. I would suspect I was lying as well if I didn't have the story right open in front of me. Anyway, that's going to be written by Ta-Nehisi Coates with art by Lennel Francis Yu. And that's a thing. I think we've all possibly been on board as saying that we're not a big fan of Coates' Black Panther.
It was all right.
Yeah, that.
It had some good bits. It had some bits that just weren't that good. I'll be fair.
Yeah, so who knows? Captain America might be good, might be bad. But luckily, we know what will be good and what will be bad.
Oh.
Because what else is coming out is a new series called The Immortal Hulk, which is going to be written by Al Ewing with art by Joe Bennett. And it's basically The Incredible Hulk, but as a straight-up horror story.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I like just the description is, horror has a name. You'd never notice the man. He doesn't like to be noticed. He's quiet, calm, never complains. Why, you can walk up to him and shoot him in the head, and all he'll do is die. Until night falls, the name is Banner. The horror is the Immortal Hulk. God, that's so Hammer Horror, I love it.
Yeah, it does actually sound quite good.
It's just, I like that even Al Ewing has kind of elaborated on that a bit. Like, Banner can die, the Hulk can't. If you shoot Banner in the head, he'll fall over dead. He'll lie there all day, dead as dirt, growing cold, getting stiff. Fight up until the sun goes down. And then, well, night is the Hulk's time. And the Hulk remembers.
What?
The Hulk would remember getting shot in the head and would want to hurt the people what did it.
Yeah, I'm just confused as to when Banner Hulk came into this diurnal cycle.
I don't know. It's a thing. What's going to happen now?
Right.
There might be.
What time he got smart and wore bunny slippers, Mick?
Yeah.
Don't question comics. They're weird. Yes. Things happen.
Yeah, but Mick bypassed the 90s comics, so he's safe. He's still sane.
Ah, I never purported to be sane.
Same with us. We've read 90s comics, Mick. Trust us.
That's the good.
Yeah.
But you know the bad.
Oh?
So Dan Slott's leaving Spider-Man, and you know who's going to replace him?
Joel Schumacher?
No. Nick Spencer.
Oh, God. Can we not have Joel Schumacher?
Joel Schumacher would write better comics than Nick Spencer would.
That's why I'm sick. Can we not just have Joel Schumacher?
As long as no one lets him get anywhere near Batman again.
Yeah, exactly.
Look, I would take spider nipples over Nick Spencer's like overly self-serious, smug, politically ham-fisted nonsense.
But it's art, goddammit, Andrew.
No, don't give me that. Nick Spencer wrote Superior Foes of Spider-Man, one of the best comedy series ever written. I'd like, flashback a couple of years ago, I would be very excited for this comic. But no, this is post-Secret Empire Nick Spencer. Unless, what if that Nick Spencer was actually just a secret Hydra version?
Hang on. Are you saying
the real fun comedy Nick Spencer's coming back?
Are you saying the record Nick Spencer?
I hope so.
are they now just recording the comics, they're recording the comic book writers as well.
I mean, they have already done that, Rob. Remember when Japanese writer Akira Ishii was retconned into being a white guy named C.B. Cebulski?
He
makes a fair point.
He does. It's already happened. So hang on, are you saying Nick Spencer is actually like a 12-year-old girl, something like that?
Yep. What I'm saying is there's going to be an extended sequence where every single Marvel writer rips off their face to reveal that they're actually a different Marvel writer. And they would have got away with it too if it weren't for those meddling kids.
Where is that damn Moon Girl writer?
Yeah.
I say that, but I also just had a horrifying vision of a new version of Scooby-Doo where the entire gang are just like teens on Twitter exposing things. just dropping those hashtags.
I was going to say.
Like, turns out Vanilla Phantom was Old Man Smithers all along. Hashtag busted.
Here's a question. With Marvel's new lineup, okay, is their obsession with old folks still going on?
Have been a lot of their heroes have suddenly turned into old people.
Yeah, I mean, there's old man Hawkeye, old man Logan, and Hulk had his maestro period, you know, when he had flowing mustaches and everything.
Captain America was an old man for a while.
Yeah.
Maybe they're trying to tap into
across Marvel's secret old man fetish.
See, this is what I'm thinking. You remember that character from Princess Jellyfish, the old man otaku?
Yes, yes, they're all actually that character.
Yeah, is whoever's in charge of Marvel these days just her in disguise, rip the face off, and it's her.
God, what if that is like Magneto as Zorn level crazy? Like Akira Yoshida is actually C.B. Cebulski is actually a teenage Japanese girl.
Yes, with an obsession about old men.
I don't know if that makes things better or worse.
Oh dear.
I'm going to walk into a break now while the sad Incredible Hulk piano music
plays. Oh, I did come up with a bit of new movie news of my own.
Oh.
Joss Whedon has quit the Batgirl movie.
Oh yeah, we didn't actually talk about that last week, did we?
No, we didn't. Because we recorded before the news broke.
That is a good point.
Does he not have a story or anything like that? Wasn't that the case with it?
The quote is, Batgirl is such an exciting project and Warner's DC such collaborative and supportive partners that it took me months to realise I really didn't have a story. Now, you see, this doesn't normally stop DC movies from happening.
True.
Yeah, I'm sure if you scroll down, there's a comment at the bottom of that article of just Zack Snyder saying, what's a story?
Story. I'll make a note of that. That'll come in useful.
I'll have to Google that word.
A narrative plot that takes place in sequence. Oh.
Then Man of Steel 2 opens with Superman reading a book. And Zack Snyder behind the camera going, there's a story.
The headline,
I am good at films now.
The headline of the Daily Planet is Superman reads. It's not Superman lives anymore.
Maybe that entire film series is just the Daily Planet being surprised that Superman can do things.
Superman cooks dinner.
Superman puts trousers on one leg at a time.
Superman,
but still hasn't mastered the underwear order.
Just imagining some of the things. Superman watches TV. Superman goes for a walk. Superman buys a can of beans.
I've been struck by the realization that surely people don't put trousers on one leg at a time. Surely, like, you put like 1 foot at a time in, but then you just pull them up both legs at the same time. Right?
This is true.
Puts trousers on, right? It's not just me.
See, at this level of in-depth coverage, this is where Lois Lane hands it over to the features editor.
See, if you were...
Now it's become a lifestyle piece for the magazine on Sunday.
Yeah, if you were doing it one leg at a time, your legs would have to be extra flexible and extra bendy.
And while we're on the subject, Superman, if you were a biscuit, what biscuit would you be?
Superman chooses Bob and Cream. What's a Bob and Cream?
It's two Bob and biscuits with chocolate cream in between.
But no, that's what Superman and Batman are when he has his special sleepovers.
Oh, Andrew.
Hey, there was an actual comic where Batman goes to the Fortress of Solitude for a sleepover. And they get invaded by alien worms who have sex and then die. And then Superman and Batman have a little cry about it.
This is true. Maybe.
Also, the reason that Superman invited Batman in the first place is so that they can talk about their feelings. I'm not making it up. That's a comic that exists.
Is this another one of those 90s comics?
No.
No, this is like the 70s.
Yep.
Wow.
Yes, yeah, Superman's special sleepover.
Okay. Shall we take a break now while we recover?
Yes.
I think we should.
Yeah.
Also, that's what Batman and Superman said.
I'm Christopher Sabat, voice of Alex Louis Armstrong, the Strong Arm Alchemist. And you're listening to The Geek Show, which has been passed down the Armstrong line for a generation or two.
Hello, do you like films? Well, wow, that's good. We're over the first hurdle. If you like films, and you also like podcasts, you should probably check out The Geek Show's only dedicated movie podcast, Cinema Eclectica. Well-staffed with a trained array of helper monkeys, we review all of the latest films every week, and do it reasonably well.
Hi, and welcome back to 4Panel, the premier podcast on comics, manga, graphic novels, and other sequential illustrated media. And now we're going to review some stuff what we've read.
Yes, and I'm up first to bat. So I'm going to start with Battle Angel Alita Mars Chronicle Volume 1 by Yukito Kishiro, which on the back has just a great kick-ass story. A quote from James Cameron. I wonder why that's on the back. Could it be because of the movie coming out soon? Anyway, for those people...
You've got all cynical since you started podcasting.
Yeah. Oh, anyway, for those who aren't aware, Battle Angel Alita has been around for a while. It's one of the cyberpunk darlings of manga. It had a two-part OVA during the late 80s, early 90s. And it's never been on screen since then. It's had the Japanese name is Gundam, and the original manga ran for was very successful. It had a sequel manga called Last Order, if I remember rightly, and that also was very successful. And so Yukito Kishiro started Mars Chronicle, which tells the story of Alita from when she was a little girl living on Mars. And it's the story of how she was an orphan called Yoko, and she makes a friend, her very first friend, in fact, and the girl who grew up with her, who is called Erica Wald. And the two of them are in this orphanage, which gets horribly attacked. There is a lot of violence, and this is not a manga for the faint-hearted. If you've read any of Battle Angel Alita or Last Order, then you'll know the stories can get very bloody and they don't pull any punches. And this is one of those stories that doesn't pull any punches. You have blatant scenes of kids basically being killed because this is an orphanage, and there's some really horrible, tragic deaths in this. And Erica and Yoko do survive, and they keep going through these situations. It ends with the two of them escaping from all sorts of hazards with this doctor who has been nominally looking after the kids in various orphanages around the area. They don't know anything about anything. They're just kids, but they are being hunted by one group in particular who they're after Yoko, dead or alive, and she's just a kid. She obviously has no knowledge of what she is as well. There is hints of a prophecy by the native Martians, the people who allowed humans to live on Mars in the first place, and, sorry?
I hate prophecies.
Yeah, the thing is, there's a hint of a prophecy here, but this is kind of retroactive thing, because the main Alita story has already been told. So I'm not sure how to take this at the moment. It's just kind of a hint of one. Saying that, you know, one of those two children, either Erica or Yoko, is going to bring about this massive change to Mars, and you still don't know which one it is, because it could be either of them. Erica is very, very smart, for example. She's very direct, and she's very clear about about her situation and who her friends are, who she cares about, everything like that.
Okay, but here's my question to you.
Yeah.
What does that accomplish that couldn't be accomplished with just foreshadowing?
See, this is the thing. This is one of the reasons why I'm a little bit hesitant about the next couple of volumes, because it's gone down this prophesying route. Now, like you, I'm not a fan of prophecies.
Yeah, it's lazy storytelling.
Yeah. And the thing is, this has actually started off in a brutal and bloody fashion, in the kind of way that I expect from Yukito Hishiro when it comes to Battle Angel Alita. And so, yes, there are all these horrific events, but you know that this is the world that as it is at that point. This is how Mars is at that point. It is brutal. It is bloody. There are people dying everywhere and for no good reason. You know, it's unconscionable, but that's what things are. And the native Martians, they are aloof from it all. They basically put this shield over Mars to allow humans to live there. And they've just been watching while humans basically destroy each other through greed and violence and whatever else. So I am curious about what's going to happen next, because I read the first chapter of this ages ago, and then I basically had to put it to one side because everything else got in the way. So I'm glad it's being released in the UK, and I am going to be looking forward to continuing Battle Angel Alita Mars Chronicle, because I am a fan.
Okay, good stuff.
Also, the other thing it makes clear is that Alita has had the cyborg body from when she was a child.
Does she also have the disconcertingly large eyes?
She has the disconcertingly large eyes and the pouty mouth as well.
Which, I've said once and will say again, those are things you could have just not put in a live-action film.
Yes.
Why did they make her eyes so big, Rob?
Maybe it's so she can see better in the dark.
No, I'm pretty sure it's so that she can see through the screen and know that I'm watching and be filled with hatred and contempt.
Oh, is it so she can see into your soul?
Yes, you get. But Battle Angel Alita looks at you, she sees the date of when you're going to die. And it's right now. And that's when she punches you through the heart. I've accidentally made an even cooler film.
Yes, you have. Anyway, over to you, Andrew.
Yep, I've been reading The Immortal Iron Fist, which is like having one fist, but then also another fist. Plural.
Wow.
Okay, I have a degree in linguistics. But this is written by Kev Andrews with art by Eifu Chan and also Shelley Chen, who I think worked more on the colours, but is kind of listed as like a co-artist. But anyway, this comic actually came out, I think, a little while ago, but it was released digitally, and now it's been collected in print for the first time. And got to admit, it gets off to a bad start, because right above the cover is written, "Don't miss Marvel's Iron Fist on Netflix." But you know what? We're not going to hold that against the comic. It didn't know. You didn't know Iron Fists. It's okay. We forgive you. So this story is, I think, a sequel to Kerr Andrews' original run of Iron Fist, which was Iron Fist, I think, My Life as a Living Weapon. Is that what it was called? No, that was just Iron Fist, the Living Weapon. And that's a series I read a little while ago. And yeah, pretty good. So I think what happened at the end of that run is it introduced a young girl called Pei from Kunlun, who is kind of, and again, I'm going to say the thing I hate, but she's prophesied to be the next Iron Fist.
Yeah.
But it's okay, because prophecy stuff doesn't really, play into the story at all. And so basically Danny's taken her back to New York and is trying to train her to be both the next Iron Fist and an ordinary teenage girl. Meanwhile, he's also got to track down the 10 exponential scrolls.
The 10 what?
Which are exponential scrolls. So, there are a bunch of ancient scrolls, which are pieces of paper not transforming aliens.
I thought you meant transforming aliens.
Yeah, I didn't realise as I was saying it, that I say scrolls and scrolls as very similar words.
I honestly thought you were talking about the scroll aliens. I was thinking, I've never heard of these exponential scrolls. What are they? Are they like super scrolls, but like on steroids or something?
Oh wait, no, they're magical bits of paper which can turn people into demons, with the idea being that each one is stronger than the next. And when they're all gathered together, they summon the evil god Mara.
And thankfully
also not from the Shin Megami Tensei series of games, but he's a giant todger. Those games are Japanese.
Just in case anyone was wondering.
And anyway, yeah. It's a lot of fun. Kind of it's a mix between the kung fu anime and also John Hughes-esque 1980s school sitcom.
So, hang on.
Not sitcom, because it wasn't on TV. It was a film.
Hang on. Are you saying that Immortal Iron Fists is basically Shaolin Showdown?
Oh my god, this series is very Shaolin Showdown. No wonder I liked it. Like, Danny and Pei end up having to fight Mara at the prom.
Oh god, it is Shaolin Showdown, isn't it?
But yeah, much like hit Cartoon Network TV series Shaolin Showdown, this book is just a heck of a lot of fun. Like, it's got some good action and some very goofy fun comedy.
So it's also it's also a bit like Jackie Chan Adventures then as well, isn't it?
It's also very Jackie Chan Adventures. It's basically every TV show I loved as a kid.
No wonder you like it so much.
Like, there is a 100% very Jackie Chan Adventures bit. Where sort of we cut to Danny Rand holding what looked like nunchucks, about to give Pei a lesson on like form and composure. And then it zooms out, and action set of nunchucks is just like a broom and a mop tied together. It's a great deal of fun, and I absolutely love the art, because it's very much like who's the guy who did Devilman Crybaby and Nighty's Long Walk on Girl?
Oh, Masaki Yuasa.
Yeah, it's very much like that, with the kind of, it looks like everyone sort of made a bit out of elastic, and I think that just works really well for like the flow of all the kung fu scenes.
Awesome.
Also introduces Detective Lee, who's like, Danny's contacting the police, and he has three teenage daughters, which he tells everyone about. Like, and it all culminates with him telling like the Demon King Mara and his three evil daughters, "Don't worry, man, I understand. I have three teenage daughters."
It's almost like cops in Marvel Comics have never heard of the phrase leverage.
Either that, or he's an inordinately proud dad.
Yes, he's a very proud dad.
For inordinately, let's think stupidly. Stupidly proud dad.
Yeah, I think that works.
Yes, he is. But he does also drive a Mini Cooper through a skeleton demon.
We didn't say he wasn't tough.
We're just saying that maybe telling the bad guys about your daughters is not the wisest move.
Well, he's not so much. I think in that scene he was probably empathizing with the demon who also has three teenage daughters.
By revealing that he has three daughters.
As well. So he empathizes.
Yeah. Hey, I'm just saying, he knows what he's doing. He's got three teenage daughters.
Hang on. The
demon Mara isn't suddenly thinking, oh.
No, he's not. He's using the Rosie O'Donnell method. He's speaking as a father.
And also, do you think someone with three teenage daughters is really afraid of a poxy demon king?
No, but he's got the moral high ground. He's speaking as a father.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's how you gain the moral high ground in America these days. You either speak as a father or speak as a mother. I don't agree with this, speaking as a mother.
But anyway, that's just Bob's opinion. What about you, Mick? By which I mean, please, oh God, take us away from this.
Well, I've been reading Richard Corben's Shadows on the Grave, which is a compilation of 24 short stories in the style of Tales from the Crypt, because that would be an insult to Tales from the Crypt.
Yes. I think Nick's mentioned this before in our meetups, and I believe this is your favourite comic series now, isn't it?
It's my favourite comic series called Shadows on the Grave by Richard Corben, yes.
Unless you were to find a different series called Shadows from the Grave by Richard Corben.
Yes. The thing is, it's not terrible. It's not particularly badly written. It's not particularly badly drawn. Unfortunately, there are 24 of these stories, only there are maybe six stories told four different ways.
Why?
Because they're all variations on the same themes. Now, I know, strictly speaking, that's how comic books work. There's usually like a theme of good versus evil, and a limited number of sort of archetypal plots. But in this particular instance, there's a story about, I mean, they're all in a horror vein. So there's all sort of zombies and blood sucking and magic and necromancy going on. So there's going to be some similarity, but basically There's the one where the dead relative gets revenge on living relatives trying to get hands on cash. There's the one where a jilted or disappointed lover seeks revenge on an ex-partner. There's the one where something happens in the woods involving nature that's a bit weird. There's the one where not going in the basement would have been the wiser move.
Or just in general, the one where someone gets told not to go to the spooky place and then they go to the spooky place and the bad thing happens.
Yeah. And then it's repeat ad nauseum. Oddly enough, the ones that stick out as being slightly less run-of-the-mill and slightly less repetitive are the ones credited to other writers. And the art style is all right for the first three or four, but by the time you get to the fifth and the sixth, it looks like the characters are being recycled as well as the stories. So Jim in story number six looks very much like old man Bob from story number one.
Wasn't this the one where they had like this weird CG art type thing?
No, it's not particularly CG. I mean, it's a style that I've seen in the pages of 2000 AD over the years. It's not a particularly CG style.
It just kind of reminded me of that. I think maybe because of the shading and that.
Yeah, it could be. But, you know, it's an all right art style. It's not one of my favourites, but it starts to feel like the same characters are being drawn over and over again, which is a shame because they're also living in the same stories over and over again. There's a big introduction piece at the beginning about how he was inspired by things like Creepshow and Tales from the Crypt and those kind of anthology comics by EC back in the day. But really, he might have been inspired to write horror comics, but that doesn't necessarily mean that just because what he was inspired by was good makes him good.
Well, no, to be fair, what it sounds like is he wasn't so much inspired to write horror comics as he was inspired to write those specific horror comics.
Yeah.
Be like me debuting my new amazing series, The Incredible Arachno Man.
No. Andrew, he's not Arachno Man yet. He has to go through his Arachno Boy stage first.
But no, he has to go straight from being a boy to a man after his Uncle Ken is gunned down. And he was the one who didn't stop the robber from robbing the
convenience store.
No, it has to be wrestling, underground kickboxing club that he was part of.
Yeah. So Shadows on the Grave. If it's the kind of thing where if someone thought you were into comics and bought you it, you'd sort of thumb through it and be mildly interested in briefly. But you won't go out and say, "Ooh, I know. I must go down to my local comic shop and see if they've got any more Richard Corden comics in."
Basically, if you want to read this series, go read Tales from the Crypt instead.
Yeah, you'll enjoy it more.
It's interesting because this has come out on the back of all the old EC comic archives coming out as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, like a thing from the grave, what yeah. I still have.
Yes.
So yeah, a disappointing read.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Hmm.
I was expecting more from something with the title like Shadows on the Grave.
Yeah, it's Shadows on the Grave. It's almost like it's the English translation of a Japanese manga title, isn't it?
Yeah.
With some kind of 24 linked stories. I mean, there is a link in story, but there is a link in character, but it's Mag the Hag, you know, which takes the part of the host for Creepshow or Tales from the Crypt, the Crypt Keeper in Tales from the Crypt. Occasionally, Mag the Hag is replaced by another character who has a disturbingly bad attempt at a humorous name that is so humorous I've forgotten what it is. Gritchety Tummy or something like that. And it's, you know, there.
Okay.
Lovely packaging, though. Beautiful plumage.
There you go. Every cloud is a silver lining.
Sorry, that just came out of left field and got me.
The cover's really nice, just don't open it.
Anyway, on to me again, is it?
It is.
Right, I've got something interesting from Burger Books, and this is, well, Burger Books and Dark Horse, I should say. This is written by Matt Johnson with art by Warren Pleece, and it's called Incognigro. Now, I'm going to be very careful with how I say things here, because this is actually kind of inspired. The author, Matt Johnson, he's a bit of an oddity in terms of what he is. He is born from African-American parents, but he grew up as a black boy who looks white. And it's something that has happened several times throughout history, where the parents and the children, even though their genetics, you know, are exactly the same, or basically you can genetically prove, your DNA proves that this child is the child of these parents, the child looks nothing like the parents. They might be lightly skinned with straighter hair or something like that. And he was one of those. And along with one of his cousins, they imagined they grew up in a different time, kind of earlier time, when civil rights and civil liberties for black people were very, very marginal, especially among the southern states. And he was inspired by an African-American civil rights activist called Walter Francis White, which is kind of an ironic name. He was one of the former leaders around 1931-1955. He led the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, or the NAACP, which still exists as an organization these days. And he was very well known for also being the same as Matt Johnson. He was a African-American man who actually looked, he was so light-skinned, he looked more like a white person. And so Incognigro is this fictional story of a newspaper journalist called Zane Pinchback, who is a reporter for the New York-based New Holland Herald, who goes around the southern states investigating lynch mobs and things like that. And because of his skin coloration, people assume he's white. He adopts more of a southern accent and takes down the names and addresses of people who conduct these lynchings and hands it to authorities or publicizes it in the newspapers. And unfortunately for him, he got chased out of the last place he got discovered. And so he's gone back up to New York and he's been given a new assignment. But the new assignment is causing him a problem because the new assignment involves his brother, who is being accused of murdering a white woman, and so it looks like his brother's going to be lynched as well. So he has to go and try and save his brother's life and find out exactly what's going on. What he finds is something a lot more complicated than he thought. The situation isn't cut and dried. It's not that his brother isn't guilty of something, but what his brother is guilty of is very different to what everyone thinks. This has got overtones of To Kill a Mockingbird in here a little bit. His brother is basically guilty of falling in love with a white woman and her falling in love with him. So, yeah. The art style is, it's not realistic per se, but it does make the effort to differentiate the African-American people from the white European people, and it takes extra pains to try and show the character of Zane Pinchback as kind of on the borderline, so you can kind of see the overtones of his African-American roots, but you can never be quite sure when you look at the character's face. You just know from the story that he is African-American.
That's pretty impressive. I can't really think of any other series that goes that in-depth in showing what a character's race is.
Yeah. I mean, there's this brilliant scene where he's talking about it. He says, he's standing in front of the mirror and says, "I am Incognigro. I don't wear a mask like Zorro or a cape like the Shadow, but I don a disguise nonetheless. My camouflage is provided by my genes, the product of the southern tradition nobody likes to talk about, slavery, rape, hypocrisy. American Negroes are a mulatto people. I'm just an extreme example, a walking reminder."
An undercover brother.
Yep, that's exactly what he is. And you know what? I am really impressed by this. It doesn't pull any punches. It doesn't hold back. It's very, very good. It deserves all the plaudits it's been getting. And there are other stories to add on to this. Incognigro isn't just this one graphic novel, and I am really looking forward to reading more, because I think this is something that has, these are stories that deserve to be told. There are characters like him in history who are unrecognized, who actually brought lynch mobs to justice. And so I really applaud Matt Johnson and Warren Police for making this graphic novel. It's very, very good. If you get a chance to read it, you should.
So Tobias Whale is like an actual thing that can happen then?
Sorry?
Tobias Whale is like a real thing that can happen.
Tobias Whale is what?
He's the villain in Black Lightning.
Yeah, basically.
Okay, but that's just a white guy and like a load of prosthetics, right?
Yeah, it is. But the whole thing about an African-American couple giving birth, you know, having a child who is so light-skinned that they can pass as a white person or just a tanned European person, that is an actual thing that can happen.
Well, I've learned something.
Yeah, I know. I didn't know this either until I read this. I love these graphic novels where you know it's telling a really good story, but something that's an important story as well, and I'm learning something at the same time as I'm being entertained.
It'll never catch on.
If only. So anyway, over to you, Andrew.
Yep, me to finish up, and I have a very quick one, because I've been reading part two of The Legend of Korra Turf Wars. So part one I covered little ways back, probably sometime last year, I think.
Yeah, I think it was sometime last year.
So this is basically the official continuation of The Legend of Korra TV series, and it's set kind of a few months after the end of the last episode. Spirit world and human worlds have been merged. Everyone isn't particularly happy about it. And boy, it is surprisingly accurate, this series of kind of children slash young adult fantasy comics and cartoons are now doing a plot about a foreign people who, through circumstances beyond their control, have been forced to take up residence in a major population city, and the local residents are kind of not being super welcoming about it. That's got maybe one or two real world implications and overtones.
Yep.
So anyway, part two. Say part two is kind of one of those ones that's a bit tough to talk about, because it's just a continuation of the story. Because, you know, I think this is a three-part comic. Obviously, part one is setting everything up. Part three is the big conclusion. And this part two is kind of just a bit moving the pieces around.
Okay.
But so it's like one of those slow episodes of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I think it's basically everyone continuing to do the things they were doing last volume. So Korra's still trying to make peace between the spirits and the people. Mako and Bolin are still trying to bring down the gangs that are terrorizing the city. The president's still just a big old jerk and probably has to dye his hair from its native blonde. And the mayor is basically Donald Trump, is what I'm saying. And yeah, I mean, it's still good. It's just tough to talk about without spoiling all the plot stuff.
That's fair enough.
We probably shouldn't do that then.
Yeah, no, because I would quite like people to go out and buy this and read it and hopefully enjoy it and then buy more, and then they'll keep making more of it.
So a purely selfish way of looking at review then.
Oh, yeah. This entire podcast is just built on my selfish desire to A, get comic books for free, and B, try and convince people to read them so that they'll keep making more of the free comics that I want.
At least you're open and honest about it.
I was going to say, isn't that why we're all here?
Yeah. Basically, listeners, you're the cattle in this equation. So let's just drop this pretense of review. Legend of Korra, Turf Wars Part 2. I enjoy it. I would like to read more of it. So chop chop, go out and buy it. Need those profit margins.
See, I don't need to do that with Battle Angel Alita, Mars Chronicle, because I know it was popular in Japan, so I know the volumes are already there. They just need translating.
I mean, you say that. I'm doing this based off on a property that's based off of quite possibly the most successful cartoon series of all time.
Nah.
Yeah, that's probably an overstatement, but Avatar is certainly not hurting for a fan base.
No, it's not. It's just when it comes to the most popular cartoon series of all time. I think the One Piece fans would have something to say about that.
Actually, Rob, I think you'll find that's anime, which is different from cartoons. Mick will tell you, he's the official anime expert.
Yes, anime expert. What's the difference between cartoons and anime?
Honestly, you get hold of one obscure title and suddenly they're the expert. Anyway, I think we've all learnt something very important here, and that is that our listeners spend their hard-earned money on comics so that we don't have to.
Yes.
Wait a minute, I do own an anime. Have that DVD of Paprika that I took off with a Rob.
Oh, yeah.
I'm an anime expert as well. So really, it's just you, Rob. You're laying the side down with your lack of anime knowledge.
Oh, whatever can I do? I must rectify this situation.
Maybe being an incredibly well-known and influential anime reviewer?
I might have to give that a try. I don't know. I've never tried it before.
Joe, I think, would really help.
What?
If you wrote a review about how overrated Evangelion is, to stir the pot.
Do you think that'd help?
I think it would. I think it might make you fairly well known in the anime community.
Do you think it might help if I point out the obvious flaws in the plot of that series?
It can't hurt.
I might have to do that.
It can hurt, Mick. It can hurt a lot. I've seen from the many, many abusive comments that Pop has shown me.
It's true. The thing is, Mick, I wrote that review, I think, in 2007. We're now 11 years on and people are still pissed about it.
Well, having just told our audience that they're funding our comic habit, we maybe ought to leave it there before we get lynched.
But if we do, we have the perfect spy to send in and solve the crime of how we got lynched.
I mean, it's not as if we can go seek... It's not like we can seek refuge on Keyframe now, is it?
Well, I can.
No, you can.
Yes, I can. I've got Tucky. I can just stand Tucky in front of me. He's a giant of a man.
That's why you brought him on. He's just your muscle, isn't he?
He's the human shield, yes.
Well, that's progress. We've stopped alienating the audience now and started on other presenters.
Oh, Tucky, like we didn't do that already.
Tucky knows he's a bear. He's already infamous with the gay community.
In fairness, we usually wait until they're actually on the show to belittle them.
I think this is Four Panels' fresh start. Now we don't have to wait for people to be on the show to belittle them. We do it in advance.
And then we tell them about this.
Yes.
Listen to the show. We talk about you a lot.
We just put it in the description.
Yes. This week we have been saying stuff about... Anyway, on that note, shall we end? Yeah.
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 Yeah, let's do that thing.
So, yeah, all of our previous shows are on Apple Podcasts and Audio Boom. We've got a Patreon, which is on our website, thegeekshow.co.uk. If you want to find us or get in touch with us in any way, Facebook or Twitter, we have our own Twitter feed, Andrew, don't we?
We do, because it's at Four Panel Podcast. I was ready this week.
Yes.
Yay!
Or you can email us, studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. So, yeah. That's us done for this week. Until next time, I've been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
And I've been Mick.
We'll see you all later.
And thanks for listening.